back to the Mainland Podcast, everybody. It is episode number 90, and I am Michael Citro. I have not been red carded yet this week. I am the founder and managing editor of themainland.com. And joining me, another guy who has not been red carded quite yet this week, David Rowe. Dave, how are you this week?
I'm good, although I am sitting at the edge of yellows, so I've got to be careful.
All right.
You know, no reds as of yet, but the real quick before we get into everything, today as we are recording this is my dad's birthday, so I wanted to give a shout out to him, say happy birthday to Lou, and because he's one of our listeners, and we thank him for doing that.
Well, look at you hijacking the show for your own personal agenda right off the bat.
Well, the man did bring me into this world. I figure I owe him something.
So his name is Lou, huh?
Yes, Lou.
So your dad and my dad have the same name, which is kind of odd.
We're like Batman and Superman.
Something like that. We haven't had our big drag out fight though, and you know.
Oh, that's true. Okay.
Not quite yet.
Yeah.
You know, the Lex Luthor hasn't pitted us against one another yet.
I think we're losing some people.
Well, that's okay, but because there was no Orlando City game this week, Dave, and there was no Orlando Pride game this weekend, so it was pretty quiet weekend from a perspective of Orlando City as a club. However, the U.S. men's national team and U.S. women's national team were in action since we last spoke a couple of times, and in addition, the lads from OCB took on the Rochester Rhinos and got a 1-1 draw in that game.
Well, and we do talk about being fans of club and country, so we're always happy to cover the U.S. national teams, be it men's, women, U-23s, U-20s, or whoever. So, like you said, despite not having any Orlando City or Orlando Pride matches to watch, there was plenty of soccer to be had.
Yeah, the international break is it's not something that we're used to in the past, having no club soccer, because in the past, Orlando City hasn't always taken those weekends off, and it's kind of hurt the team at times, but with call-ups. But actually this year, only a couple of Canadians getting some call-ups internationally, so it wouldn't have been as big a deal. Obviously, you don't want to lose a Kyle Aaron and a Will Johnson, but it hasn't been as big a deal as it was in years past when you're losing several guys, including Kaká, for international duty. In the past, we've lost Kevin Molino and Breck Shea and that. So, a significant portion of the team of the team's offense. Not that Kyle Aaron's not a significant, but yeah, there were more guys missing before than there are now. Of course, Darwin Serrin also was missing with his team. So, lots of guys were going. I kind of like it not having as many internationals on the team, even though internationals tend to mean you have really good players. I'd rather have really good players that are not, just not kind of on the fringes of their country's, national teams. That way, you've still got a heck of a lot of quality.
And we actually do seem to have some of those on the fringe of national team quality players right now, with Joe Bendick and Jonathan Spector getting called up to the 40-man roster for Gold Cup, but we don't know if they'll make the 23-man roster. So that's kind of what you're alluding to there. And you're right, it is nice because it means that they're good, but maybe they don't have enough political clout or whatever, and we get to keep them.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully, we'd get to play a bunch of players that are like the 24th man, if you will, on their team. That kind of, so that'd be good because they're still really good players, and they don't have to leave us behind and don't have to risk injury in international play. This weekend's opponent for Orlando City, Montreal Impact, they lost Ambroise Oyongo for the entire season when he was injured playing for Cameroon. So that's the kind of thing that can happen. And, of course, it's just part and parcel of life of an athlete. Easily the same thing could happen training. So it's like when people say, I don't want our guys to go to the All-Star game. I don't want them to play in the Gold Cup and that kind of thing. They could get hurt. Well, they could just as easily get hurt out at Sylvan Lake, with Christian Aguita, throwing his studs right in their foot on a tackle. You never know what can happen. So yeah, we last spoke a week ago, and that Wednesday night, OCB took on the Rochester Rhinos, and it was one of those games where, Dave, where the visitors came in, they stayed very compact. They were letting OCB have the ball, and OCB wasn't able to break them down very often. But a very nice goal for Haji Berry on a give and go kind of play, and he was up for USL Goal of the Week. Rochester did also score in that game, and OCB wasn't able to find a second goal, and perhaps a little bit fortunate not to give up more goals at the end, because the right side of the defense really struggled for some reason. Scott Thompson and Zach Carroll on the left side of the back line were really, really struggling down the stretch, allowed several 1v1s against first-time goalkeeper this year, Josh Saunders. So Josh got his first game with the Lion Crest on his left chest, and he looked like a guy who was rusty on the one Rhino's goal. Ball comes in on a fairly routine looking cross, and it just looked like he misjudged it or something, and he spilled it, and it was an easy tap in goal for Rochester to draw level shortly after Haji Berry had opened the scoring. So that was unfortunate, but as bad as a howler, bad of a howler as that was for Saunders, as rusty as he was, boy, he really looked good in the last 10 minutes of that game when the Rhinos continued to get behind the right side of that, or the left side of the back line.
There's nothing like muffing one to make you just pissed off enough to try that much harder the rest of the game. And I think that maybe that was what it was. Like you said, that ball came in on the cross. He looked to be all over it, and it just bounced out. I mean, his hands were shaking, his chest stuck out too far. I don't know what it was, but it came out, and that was an easy equalizer for Korea. But I think then from then on, he had it in his mind that, okay, yeah, screwed up, but I've got a job to do. I'm going to do it, and I think he did better. Also, on the Haji Berry goal, that was a great run that he made in there on that give and go. I mean, it just, coming across left to right, and fast enough, and that ball getting out there and getting his foot on it, go around the keeper and just slotted home really nicely. I thought that was it was well deserved to be up for goal of the week. It was really nice, and it's a shame that it was 2 minutes later that Rochester was able to come back and equalize, because it takes a little of the wind out of the sails. You go up and you're feeling good, and then 2 minutes later, back to reality.
Yeah, it really threw the brakes on for sure. But you mentioned Josh Saunders and the way he responded, and to me, that's indicative of a veteran goalkeeper like he is. He's been around. He knows the game. He knows that there are ups and downs in a game, and ebbs and flows, and good mental toughness on his part to shake that off and play really, really well down the stretch, and save his team, at least a point in that game. I know, you could look at it two ways. He cost his team 2 points. But he also saved his team a point. So, I guess on the whole, it was a wash when you look at it. But it's funny because we get a lot of grief on our in our comments section on Twitter. People just ripping Seb Hynes, and Seb's side of the field was not the problem on Wednesday night. The down the stretch, it just seemed like really bad communication between Thompson and Carroll, and I'm not sure. If that was aggravated by the fact that the Rhinos were just making really intelligent runs and really well-threaded balls, but however, whatever was the responsible condition or conditions, it certainly was a lot of work for Josh Saunders to do down the stretch to keep that a 1-1 game.
Well, unfortunately, like I said, he did that. Speaking about Seb, I kind of feel like Seb could go out. He could have a game where he makes his way up the field, gets a goal, gets an assist, also gets a save on the other end, because the goalie's out of position, and people would still be upset with him.
Yeah, well, I mean, every team needs a scapegoat, I guess. And it's there's irrational love and irrational hate for players on every team, and it's funny because I think everybody kind of looks fondly on Adrian Venter's time in Orlando, but he only scored 5 goals in his time here. And it's like, you know, you would think that he was this messiah coming over here and just dominating. And he really had some games where he was invisible. But, you know, he's one of those effort players who always looks like he's maybe doing more than he is, I guess. But I'm not trying to knock him, because he certainly was a valuable player for Orlando City, and he was a guy who you respected the way he played the game. But I think he gets a little bit probably more praise than he deserves, and I think Seb gets a lot more hate than he deserves, because you know, we've talked about this ad nauseum, you know, that the guy hasn't been healthy, and he's been asked to play, you know, with basically 1.5 knees, which you kind of need too in soccer, because it's a lot of running and jumping and that kind of thing. But he definitely looks like he has a little bit more spring in his step. He's never going to be, you know, he's not going to run down Carlos Rivas by any stretch of the imagination. But he is certainly moving better than we've seen him in an Orlando City uniform in these few outings with OCB. And it's going to be interesting to see if he gets a recall for the U.S. Open Cup game tomorrow night, because he doesn't require international slots. So you only get 5 international players in the Open Cup. 5 internationals can dress. Same international rules for MLS in terms of they can be American or they can have a green card. But you only get 5 of them in the entire 18-man roster. So it will be interesting to see how Jason Christ uses those, and certainly – you know, if he used a center back pairing of Tommy Redding and Seb Hines, you'd have 2 center backs without using an international slot right there.
Well, and of course, you know, Seb, like we've said ad nauseum, you know, he's healthier now, and he's experienced. Like you said, in you know, versus Rochester, it wasn't his side of the field that was the problem. So, you know, when we go into U.S. Open Cup, and we're going to talk more about it later, you know, there's going to be a really wild mix of who's even going to be on the field. And if you've got, you know, somebody like Seb who is steady, you know, especially when you're going up against somebody you don't play very often, Miami FC, That's, you know, a steadying presence, especially on the back line, can make all the difference in the world. So I agree. I hope that he's in the mix. I think that a Tommy Redding and Seb Hines, you know, center back combo would look pretty good, especially with the way that Tommy's been playing. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what that starting 11 looks like.
Yeah, it's interesting, because Jason Christ said this week that he's, you know, despite the fact that it's a compressed schedule and basically 2 games a week for the, you know, foreseeable future, as long as the team stays in the competition, he said he's mainly going to lean on MLS guys and not use a lot of USL guys. Now, I don't know if that means MLS guys with experience or MLS guys that have been on, you know, on the, you know, dressing for the games in the MLS this year, you know, rather than, you know, guys that are on loan. So I think it's certainly an opportunity to take a look at guys like Haji Berry and Richie Larea and Pierre Da Silva, and maybe you don't play all of them at the same time, but I think it's certainly an opportunity for Jason Christ to see what he's got in competitive games at a higher level, and see how they can produce, because they've produced pretty well at the USL level. So we'll talk again about U.S. Open Cup more in a little bit, but just to wrap up OCB, it's nice to see that the team is able to get a point, and it's going to be interesting to see if they can keep it going. Rochester is a quality team, so very important to get that point. We can talk now about the U.S. men's national team. I feel like the women played a couple friendlies. We could touch on that a little bit, not to short shrift the women's team. But those were friendlies. These were World Cup qualifiers, Dave. And, you know, the U.S. was able to go out to a couple of places with some altitude and get a couple of results. First of all, getting the 2-0 win over Trinidad and Tobago, which was a little bit more difficult than we expected. But a couple of goals from Christian Pulisic. And as he continues to really, really come on at a very young age and perform at the international level. So, you know, a clean sheet for Tim Howard, although he was helped out by his woodwork a little bit. You know, Trinidad and Tobago had a couple of dangerous moments, potentially more or at least as many dangerous moments as Mexico had, but they were not able to get on the scoreboard. And Christian put in two, and I think a deserved win last week over Trinidad and Tobago.
You know, Christian getting that brace, when that happened, I saw stats, and I know you've seen it too. After those two, the last eight goals up until that point scored by the United States all had him touching the ball, whether it was him scoring the goal or providing the assist.
Yep.
That last eight goals. I mean, that's insane. I could easily spend a half an hour talking about, you know, Pulisic's game, just, you know, bringing in the stuff from Bundesliga and Borussia Dortmund and what he does with the national team. You know, it would be real easy to talk a whole bunch about him. All I'm going to say is he's doing everything that is asked of him. He seems to be handling the pressure really well, and he's producing. And I was actually, when I was on my way home tonight, I called my dad because it was his birthday, and of course we ended up talking about soccer because that's what we do. And he, his comment was, "Did you see what?" And I'm jumping ahead a little bit. He goes, "Did you see what Mexico did to Christian?" He, you know, they were, every time he touched the ball, they had two or three guys on him. Well, of course they did, because of what he did, you know, the previous eight goals that the U.S. had. I mean, you're gonna get on that guy. And what's amazing for me is, he's not the stereotypical American player, big athlete, you know, fast, big, whatever. I mean, he's wry, and yes, he's only 18, but I mean, you know, he's wiry and quick, and he's got amazing vision. So, you know, kudos to him for that brace in that game. And the other thing I found kind of funny was the look on Dempsey's face when he was subbed off. I thought he was going to smack Reina upside the head for pulling him out of the game because yeah, he had scored a goal.
Yeah, Clint left the game against Trinidad and Tobago. Didn't look real happy. Didn't have a great game, though. He really wasn't playing all that hot, I didn't think. And, you know, it was time to make a move. Hey, the thing about Bruce Arena is he's not going to be pushed around by these veteran players. He's going to do it things his way. And speaking of doing things his way, I think it raised a lot of eyebrows with his lineup and shape for the game at the Azteca against Mexico. Went with five across the back, something that, you know, was not something that Jurgen Klinsmann did well. But everybody knew their roles. They worked on it. It wasn't a surprise. Everybody knew what was going on. They seemed prepared. The game went exactly as they kind of had envisioned. And even though Mexico had a lot of the possession, there weren't a lot of really, truly dangerous chances for Mexico. They had a lot of trouble breaking down the back line. And I thought Jeff Cameron was phenomenal in that game.
Yeah.
And early on, just a fantastic bit of anticipation by Michael Bradley, and he steps up and he chips one from nearly midfield, and that was just a crazy good goal to start the game and get the Americans off on the right foot.
Well, you and I could go off again on the Michael Bradley haters and all that, which I'm not going to do, but you know, that goal was the goal of an experienced player. He knew where he was, he saw where the goalie was, he knew where the defenders were, and he knew where he was geographically and what altitude he was at, so that when he chips that, it's going to carry because he's at 7,600 feet. And that was just, it was a smart play. You know, is it possible he misses that one? Sure, absolutely. But you know what? It was a purposeful shot. I think he absolutely knew exactly what he was doing. And I think that if he had been someplace else, he wouldn't have done it, and he would have tried something different. So, you know, kudos to Bradley for, you know, making that goal and making it early. I mean, go back and there's videos online of when, after he scores that, of the Outlaws just going nuts. And it's fun to watch that video. I mean, you know, I was jumping up and down when he scored it anyway. And you go back and watch that video, and you get that chill again, you know, from watching it. So, really good. It, you know, anytime you play in Azteca, although, you know, the last couple times that we've played Mexico, you know, we're doing pretty good. But anytime you play in Azteca, I mean, that's a hard hill to climb. And you know, that was the quickest goal ever scored in Azteca, and it was only the sixth ever.
Yeah, and it was a fantastic strike. I mean, I think you got to put that up there with the all-time great strikes in U.S. men's national team history. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, there are plenty of Michael Bradley haters, but if you look at it this way, all the things you like about Adrian Venter, he hustles, he works his butt off, he does whatever's asked of him, he leaves it all out on the field, he runs, he just never stops, his engine just keeps going. All of those things also describe Michael Bradley, although only he's a defensive midfielder, not an attacking midfielder. So I think that, you know, he's been a little misunderstood, a little, you know, maligned because some of his past coaches have not played him in his best position or put him in a good spot to succeed and use his strengths properly. You know, he's been asked to be an attacking midfielder. He's not one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like asking Christian Nogueira to play attacking midfield. It's just not, you know, it's going to look good in the back, but when you get to the final third, it's going to look pretty terrible. And that's what it's looked like in the past. But as far as a guy who, you know, shields the back line, goes box to box, occasionally chips in with some timely offense, I think Bradley has been everything that the U.S. has asked him to be, and he nearly got the game winner, hit the woodwork later in the game. So with another, just an audacious, you know, he just said, I'm going to test Ochoa, and and I'm going to really
it worked the first time.
Yeah, I really hit it, and he, you know, I don't know if Ochoa had it covered. If it had gone, you know, a couple inches to the left, it may have snuck by and gotten in for the winning goal. So a good game for him, but for me, Jeff Cameron was the man. But getting a little ahead of myself, the U.S. actually had a chance to go up 2-0. They got a box. They got the ball pinging around in the box, and Bobby Wood swung at a ball that had taken a hop, and if he had just made good contact with it, it's 2-0. Instead, it comes out and starts the break, and you know, Vela scores, and Mexico ties the game. So there's a bit of just a bit of misfortune on that one. There were. You know, Mexico had a lot to do on that. You can point to a lot of some people have pointed at DeMarcus Beasley for not, you know, taking his man out wide and forcing him to cross in to the strength of the defense. There are people that are taking a Kellen Acosta to task for not only not fouling in the midfield, but also not when he recovered, not closing down in the middle when Vela cut inside of Beasley. So there's a little bit of blame for him to go around. But I think just all in all, you're playing Mexico in Mexico. It's going to be very, very hard to keep a clean sheet, and they weren't able to do that. And some have even blamed Guzan for not getting, you know, for being a little bit slow to react. I'm not sure how much a goalkeeper change would have affected that, but certainly, you know, people are not happy that it wasn't a win. But I think you have to put into perspective that this is not about necessarily winning. It's about gaining points in the hex, moving up, distancing yourself from the bottom teams in the hex, and qualifying for Russia.
You know, we had two games. We've got 4 points out of those two games. I'm ecstatic. You know, I did expect us to get, you know, 3 against Trinidad and Tobago, and we got that. When we made our predictions last week, I was a little iffy on, you know, what we did with Mexico, and to come out of there, you know, with a point going into Azteca, I'm perfectly happy with that. I will take that every time we go to that stadium, no problem.
All right. Well, we've got plenty more to bring you on this week's edition of the podcast, episode number 90, but why don't we get to our special guest and talk a little bit of U.S. Open Cup? We'll do that right after this. All right, joining us on the Mainland Podcast, we're very happy to have with us former Orlando City and current Miami FC defender, Brad Russin. Brad, welcome to the podcast, and thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So I want to start out by asking you just a little bit about, since we last saw you here in Orlando, your career has taken a new path, and I just wanted you to, you know, I'm sure our listeners are interested in you filling us in on what you've been up to and how things are going for you.
Yeah, I've been I mean, my whole career, I feel like I've been a few places, but that's how soccer is, I guess, in the States. Yeah, so after Orlando, I went to Tampa, and I know, unfortunately for you guys, it's not what you like to hear. But went to Tampa 6 months. Things didn't work out, so I actually requested a trade. Went to San Antonio, did quite well. Had a great group of guys. And after San Antonio, it was a bit of a question mark in terms of the organization and what was going to happen with the team. So I got a call from Miami FC, and I decided to sign here for a few years. And I'm here right now, and I'm enjoying myself. And last year I was injured a bit, so I had to get over that. But I'm healthy now, training well, and just looking for my chance.
Well, we're glad you're back in the Sunshine State anyway, so at least there's that. You mentioned coming back from injury. What is your game plan for getting back on the field, and how do you see that playing out?
Yeah, I mean, I always have the same mentality, whether it's getting back on the field or if I'm starting, and that's always training hard and giving my all. Obviously, I'm a team, a good teammate, and even in Orlando when I was here, I always pushed the guys that were in front of me, and always being a positive influence in the team, and ultimately to most benefit me. If the team wins, then I benefit, whether I'm playing or I'm not playing. I have that mentality, so just to keep working hard, and when my chance comes, to be ready and take my chance.
Now, Brad, you were part of the USL side here, and just wanted to get your thoughts on what you've seen as a person who helped build this club into what it is now. You know, you did your part. So, I mean, how do you feel when you see what this city has done to embrace the club, and you know, you got the new stadium and an MLS squad here that's, you know, that's selling out the building regularly. You know, what are your overall thoughts on being a part of that?
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible. I think since day one that I came to Orlando, obviously it was USL, but I didn't think that fans really, it didn't matter to the fans. And that's very special in terms of, they like soccer, they like football, and I think this city is it's pretty incredible, the fan support that you guys have got. The stadium is beautiful. Just when I signed as well, that all that stuff was kind of coming out in the media with the stadium and the plans, and it started early. You guys built it from the ground up, and it's you can see the dividends today have paid off, and it's yeah, it's going to be special to go to the stadium and actually see it and kind of know that I was a part of building Orlando City.
Well, and we do appreciate, you know, you being a part of building that, especially to, you know, where they are now. And of course, like you said, you're going to get a chance to go to the stadium. Have you even been there as a, you know, just as a visit or anything yet? Have you seen it? And if not, how you think it's going to feel?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been there, but obviously I've watched many games and talked to a lot of players that have played there. And obviously it's a special place. You guys have built it as a home, and I don't think many people go there and get a win. So it's going to be a tough game on Wednesday, and we're looking forward to the challenge. I'm looking forward to obviously seeing some familiar faces with the club, and just realizing that it's going to be a special game for us, for me personally as well.
So, Brad, there's a story about one of the goals that you scored while playing for Orlando City. You tapped in a ball that was headed in that Tyler Turner had shot. It would have been his first professional goal. And I was told that, you know, you were going to buy him dinner for that. Did you ever get to buy Tyler dinner for that goal?
I think I bought Tyler more than dinner. I'll put it that way. I took care of him. Him and Harrison, I took care of when I was there. So those are two of my good buddies. And there's a few guys that I still, you know, talk to quite often, and we had a good group. So,
well, that's good. Well, speaking of a group, you're with Miami FC now. How are things going? You know, like you said, you moved around a little bit. You've landed in Miami. You know, you signed on for a few years. Tell us about the group down there. How the players are, the fan base. You know, give us a little insight.
Yeah, it's been very good. I think from a club perspective, I think we have a target on our back. We're the biggest club, I would say, in NASL right now. So it's an obligation for us to win, and we've been doing that. We're at the top of the table right now. Win a couple more games, and I think we win the spring season, which automatically puts us into the semifinal for to actually win the league. Guys have been great. We have a pretty experienced group. So it's been a learning curve for the first year going into the second, but the second year, obviously this year, has been a lot better. And I think our goal is obviously to do well in Open Cup and obviously win the league. So like I said, Wednesday is going to be an important game for us.
You know, a lot of people, I think, in Orlando don't have a full grasp of the quality of play in the NASL. What kind of soccer is played in that league? You know, obviously we're used to MLS and also to the USL, but it is the second tier league, but you guys don't seem to be playing like a second tier team.
Yeah, like I said, I think we have, you know, majority of the boys here have played either overseas or have prior experience in MLS. So like I said, we have a very experienced team, and I think we're not far off from MLS, to be quite honest. Obviously, you have the Kakas and the Giovincos and, you know, the difference makers in MLS. But soccer's funny. I mean, whether you're in USL or MLS, I mean, you see in the Open Cup that anyone can beat anyone on any single day. So, like I said, we're up for the challenge on Wednesday, and it should be a good battle.
Well, you know, we're all too well aware of how the U.S. Open Cup can go for an MLS squad, but of course, you know, once a lion, always a lion. So we'll, even though you're with Miami FC, we're still going to think you as one of us, although just maybe a little, you know, off on Wednesday night. But that being said, how do you see it playing out tomorrow? I mean, do you know, not to put you on the spot, do you have any predictions? How are you feeling going into the Purple Palace, as Michael likes to call it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm going to say we're gonna win, you know. But no, it's gonna, like I said, it's gonna be a good game. I know. I think Kyle and Will, I think, are gone for the game, so we're not really sure of obviously the formation or the lineups that Orlando's going to put out, with them having an off weekend as well on this past weekend. So
look, we don't know that either.
No, it'll be interesting. Like I said, we're going to put our strongest squad out there. We have a lot to play for. So we have a lot to prove. And I think all the guys here are very confident, the coaching staff and everyone behind the club's confident we can get a result. So,
you know, you're not a stranger to this competition. What is it about this cup competition, this knockout sort of structure? You know, how do you have to approach a tournament like this?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, a USL team can beat the, you know, MLS team on any night. MLS team has a bad night. USL team, you know, playing like it's the World Cup, and they win. Or even lower level teams beating, you know, an NASL team or a MLS team. But ultimately, I think it's we're going to go into it playing the way we know how to play, and we're confident in that. So other teams might change formations or change systems and stuff like that. But we're going to play the way we know how to play and how we played the last 10 games or so. And we've been pretty successful doing that. So we're just going to stick to our plan and hope it all goes well.
Well, you guys have obviously been playing well. You know, like you said, you're sitting up there at the top of the NASL. But I'd like to focus, you know, more on you, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, how you play with the same intensity, whether you're on the bench or on the field. Other than, you know, let's assume that you're able to work yourself back onto the field. Do you have any personal goals that you're, and I don't mean goals as in scoring goals, but just, you know, how do you want the season to play out for you, you know, either Open Cup or just, you know, NASL?
Yeah, I mean, no matter what, I want to be on the field. You know, that's why we play the game. But I'm understanding as well that, you know, if guys are playing well in front of me and we're winning games, I'm going to be a good teammate and push those guys. And like I said, it only benefits me that if we win, you know, the spring, we win the whole thing, we win the Open Cup, it's going to benefit me no matter what. If I play or if I don't play, ultimately I want to play. But when I do get the chance, I mean, again, just be myself and enjoy the moment and do what I've done my whole career, which is, you know, just play, be confident, communicate, and hopefully win.
What's it like to play for a guy like Nesta? I mean, he's well known in world football, and he's a guy that obviously demands a lot of respect. What's it been like for you to be underneath him?
Yeah, I think for all of us, it's kind of been a learning curve in terms of, you know, being a new team and 20-something odd players the first year and never playing with each other. And it was his first year of coaching as well. So ultimately, he's learning how we learned. So his systems, his style of play has come to show that, you know, this year it's working out quite well. He's obviously one of the best center backs to ever play the game. So for me to come here and for him to want me in his team from day one was something special and something that ultimately I don't think I could turn down. So I decided to come, and it's been great so far.
Brad, before we let you go, just wanted to ask one more question. How do you think the long trip from Edmonton will affect the team? Obviously, going from coast to coast is never ideal, and you know, quite a ways north as well on this trip, and coming straight to Orlando and staying in hotels and that kind of thing. Is the travel? I know it's always a little bit of a grind when you're playing multiple games in a week, but do you expect do you want the team to come out and try to get on top early? Is that going to be something that is in your mindset, or is this, you know, just another game?
Yeah, for us, I think the club's done quite well to plan the travel and the accommodations. We've actually been staying up in Orlando since Sunday. We got in Sunday and have been resting for the last few days training. So it won't be a last-minute drive up to Orlando in a 4-hour get off the bus and play a game. So the club's taking it pretty serious, like I said, and I don't think there's really any excuse. We've been, you know, for the most part, Nesta's been rotating guys where he's needed to, and I think for the most part, guys will all be fresh and ready to go, and obviously playing against an MLS side in a beautiful stadium. Hopefully the weather permits and the fans come out, even if they're against us. I think it'll make us even better. So, like I said, I'm looking forward to Wednesday and hopefully getting a good result.
All right. Well, Brad Russin, former Orlando City, current Miami FC center back. We have, you know, hashtag forever Lion. But if you get on the field Wednesday night, we hope that you don't punish us too much. thanks so much for being with us on the podcast. And good luck to you the rest of the season.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, we want to thank Brad Russin for being with us. Really appreciate him being with us the night before a game, and in a strange city or an unfamiliar city, but in the visiting city, as mm-hmm. he is now an invader rather than one of the hometown heroes. So, Brad, we thank you, and thanks to Christy from the Miami FC PR department for setting that up. And we look forward to seeing what happens on the field in the U.S. Open Cup. And again, we'll talk a little bit more about that in just a few minutes. Right now, I want to go back to the international break, Dave. And first of all, say that as we record this, Brazil beat Iceland today, and Marta had the only goal in a 1-0 Brazilian victory. So congrats to Marta, and hopefully her and Monica and Camilla will all make it back to Orlando really quickly so that they can be part of the game this weekend. Or actually, they're flying. I guess they're playing at Houston, so I guess they're going to need to fly to Texas.
Well, that would... Is that a shorter trip or a longer? I guess it depends if they have to go through Atlanta or not, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure if they have direct flights or whatnot. I'm hoping that hopefully the team got them some direct flights, and hopefully they're already on the plane or whatever. But you know, this is international breaks that are going to really affect the Pride, because the Australian nationals and Brazilian internationals and U.S. internationals, which are mostly hurt right now. But speaking of the Pride, they stuck out some news today that a little bit of an update on Alex Morgan. They're waiting for her international transfer paperwork to come back so that she can be official again. And also her hamstring was looked at by doctors at Orlando Health, and they say about a 3 to 4 week timetable for returning to the pitch. So it will hopefully not be too much longer before Alex and Marta are both playing up top for Tom Sormani.
Yeah, as good of news, I guess, as we can hope regarding Alex. We knew about the injury. She went out when she was with Leon. If it's 3 to 4 weeks, and she seems to be in good spirits, according to her tweets, happy about being back in Orlando. And I'm sure she's ready to get back on the pitch, but she's smart enough to know that she's got to do what the doctors say. So we can look forward to a early July return for Alex. Unfortunately, we don't have a July 4th game, because then we could have a whole, welcome back to America thing. But regardless, it will be nice to have her back. And like you said, and we've been saying it all season, is the idea of her and Marta both up top is just fantastic. And we only have a month to wait now, folks, or not even that. So just hold on.
Yeah, she could be back in the lineup. Could be as early as the first against Chicago, but probably more realistic to expect maybe on July 8th at the Washington Spirit. So that would be not only at July, on the July 4th week, but also in the nation's capital. So there you go.
There we go.
If she doesn't make it back for the 8th, then the next game would be the 15th against FC Kansas City here in Orlando. But welcome back to Alex. I was going to say welcome back to the captain, but she's not the captain this year. That would be Ashlyn Harris, and we can't wait to welcome her back from her injury. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the U.S. Women's National Team went to Europe. They don't travel a lot for friendlies, but, Dave, they went to two pretty difficult places to play, Sweden and Norway. Two of, I believe both those teams are in the top 15 in the world FIFA rankings, and they got a pair of 1-0 victories, which is good, but they didn't play particularly well, which is bad. So I guess the thing is, if they go there and get shellacked, maybe Jill Ellis's hot seat gets a little hotter, but they won, they got results, even though they didn't play particularly well. And also, they picked up a few more injuries. Rose Lavelle, who scored the only goal in the Sweden game, did her hamstring in against Norway, and Mallory Pugh got hurt in the run-up to the Norway game. So a couple of key injuries there for Jill Ellis with about a month to go before the Tournament of Nations out in the West Coast with Australia and Brazil and Japan.
Yeah, it's I guess we're going to have to see, how bad the injuries are. I hadn't looked, but anytime you can get results, even if it's in a friendly, you're going to take it, especially because it's the U.S. Women's National Team. They are they're currently not the top women's team in the world. They're number two, but our expectation is that they are always going to be up at the top, which there was a really good article that I linked in my Lion Links this week, where it talks about if 91 hadn't happened, things might have been way different. And I encourage you, if you didn't read that, go back and read it, because it's a pretty interesting article. But regardless, for me, Rose Lavelle continues to impress. While I was watching her during the Sweden game, what was going through my head was I was glad she didn't do that against the Pride when we played her recently. Mm-hmm. She is, ever since I've been watching her, she is something special out there, obviously number one pick. I love watching her on the national team. I hate watching her play against the Pride because she's one of those that is incredibly creative. Mm-hmm. She's kind of like, Pulisic in that, young player, dynamic, creative, and when, the ball is at their feet, it's always a danger that something's going to happen. So the future is very bright for her. But it was, especially in that game versus Sweden, it was obvious that she was the one that was making things happen. And then, oddly enough, just like Christian, the second game, she was, for the most part, shut down. Not that she played bad, just that the chances weren't there for her. So it was kind of a weird mirror effect between the two of them. Between the international games.
Yeah, she is dynamic. She's a very creative player, like you said. The thing I like about both her and Christian Pulisic on the men's side is they do so much with what they have in terms of they don't just always try to blow by you. They don't always try to outthink you. They sometimes just make quick little darting, sudden stop-and-go motions, and they kind of just do what you don't expect them to do. And that's how they free themselves. And I think that's a trademark of what Marta does, in fact, for the Orlando Pride and what she's done for Brazil throughout her career, is that, you just try to do that one thing that they don't think you're going to do or they don't figure you could pull off, and it just puts you on another level. So I think that Rose Lavelle is good for the U.S. women's national team. She's certainly good for the Boston Breakers. And like you, I'm glad she didn't find the net in the recent meeting with the Pride. So the Pride got the better of her that day with at least another game or two against them this year. So a couple of wins for Jill Ellis' squad. So we like that. We'd like to see a little bit better team play. Didn't get a whole lot of scoring chances, and when they did get scoring chances, they weren't hitting the target with their shots a lot, and that can happen on the road. You get tired legs, you've been staying in hotels, and you're not quite yourself, the things aren't the way they normally are. So it's it's unfortunate, but I think one thing we did find out is that Jill Ellis still needs a right back. I think Kelly O'Hara was just a stopgap measure. I don't think there's a really true right back other than Allie Krieger in the U.S. women's national team pool right now that is playing at a high level as a right back. So I think that, Allie will, it's a little too early to see. Maybe Allie will get a call up for this tournament coming up, or maybe Jill will continue to try to plug in somebody there in that role to move forward in the next World Cup cycle, because Allie's not getting any younger, but we certainly would like to see Allie continue to play for the U.S. women as long as, she's playing at a high level like she is.
Absolutely. And, obviously we all think that Allie is probably not even probably is one of the best at that position. Jill Ellis maybe, trying to build for the future and see what else she has out there, especially because, we're talking about friendlies. It's entirely possible that Allie will get the call up. We talked about the Sweden match. I wanted to mention the game against Norway, and we were actually talking, internally on our forum, and you had mentioned that to my question, or it wasn't a question, it was my observation that I was like, I felt that, like, we should be getting some more chances, and you made a really great point of, look, they're in a different shape. We've got injured players out. They're on the road, and Norway is a good team. And all of that was true. We, fortunately, in the 60th minute, Kirsten Press was able to break through off of a great a long ball and put it in, as she is wont to do upon occasion. Mm-hmm. What was funny is that I went back and looked at that today, and I believe that Lavelle went up to try and head the ball, and it just barely missed her and was able to fall to the ground in front of a streaking press, so that she could put it in the back of the net and secure the win. But you know, that was that kind of counterattack seemed to be what was their best chance in that game against Norway.
Well, great ball from Becky Sauerbrunn and got in behind the defense, and Kristen Press did what she does best, and that is find the seam between the defenders and get into it before they know what's happening. She did a great job of that, and she did a good job of finishing, and it's something that we want to see more of from Kristen Press, because she's obviously very valued in that national team setup, you know, as the successor to Alex Morgan, if you will, at the striker position. She's certainly capable of that. She shows that week in and week out in the NWSL. And, you know, to have a Kristen Press working, you know, operating at a high level with a Crystal Dunn and a Mallory Pugh, the future is pretty bright when mm-hmm. you have those three young players, you know, playing well. So you know, you're going to have Alex Morgan for the next few years, and then probably she'll start to fade out of the national program a bit, and then you're going to see that next wave. And it's kind of the exciting thing about being a soccer fan is, you know, the shelf life of soccer players is not terribly long, so you're always looking for those next young players coming up through the system.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's pretty exciting, especially, you know, on the women's side, like you say, you know, between Pugh and Lavelle, and there's so many that and I attribute that a lot of that to the success of the women's team, you know, going back 20 years. They've been raised in a culture, at least on the women's side, of U.S. women's soccer is the best in the world, or is always among the best in the world. And as such, they expect to play at a high level. And there's a ton of young women that are playing the game, and the women's college ranks are swelled with good players. And it's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy in that we have a very large country with a lot of people, and this is an opportunity for these young women, and they are seizing it, and they are doing the practice. They are, you know, we joke about soccer moms, but you know, that does happen every freaking weekend in this country, and it's paying off for the women's side, obviously sooner than you know, the men's side. I mean, that's now coming along also. What's funny is when I was in England back in the early 90s, and I think it was right before the women won their World Cup, you know, I was with a bunch of Brits, and they were telling them, you know, U.S. soccer is, you know, pointless. You know, you guys should just give up. And I said, U.S. soccer is going to win a World Cup in the next 10 years. Now, I was right. I was wrong about the gender, but I was right.
Well, you know, haters gonna hate. We would be remiss talking about the U.S. national team if we didn't mention the U23 women who went to the Nordic tournament, and they ended up going unbeaten and in a first-place tie with England. But England won the tournament on goal differential. The two teams met and drew 0-0. But England finished at a +6, and the U.S. at +4 in goal differential. So England gets the tournament title. But Dani Weatherholt, the Pride midfielder, she started the game against Sweden. At least I didn't get to see if she had played in the other games, but I do know that it was a you know, a good trip for her and a good trip for the U.S. U23s, and they did very well. And just unfortunately, England was able to get a couple more goals against those other opponents and give up fewer than the U.S. U23s. So good job for Dani Weatherholt, and she'll come back with a little bit more confidence too after playing like that against some really top competition.
And it couldn't be a better reemphasis of my point in that, you know, talking about the youth players playing at the top of the game. Well, there you go. Under 23s go in. All they lost on was goal differential. And, you know, they took England to the winner to a draw. So, you can't ask any more from that. Obviously we're really proud of Dani, and, I agree. She's, you know, anytime you can get out and play, international competition, you know, step outside of your normal box, that's only going to help your play when you come back to the club.
All right, and so the Pride will be in action on Saturday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time at Houston Dash. I don't know if I'm going to get to see that game. They're starting an hour after the Orlando City game begins, but I won't be at the Orlando City game either, Dave, because I'm going to be visiting my wife's relatives in Nevada, so I will be in Las Vegas. But my Las Vegas vacations are much different than most people's, as I am visiting my mother-in-law's house. I'll try to have a little bit of fun while I'm out there, but I hate being gone in the middle of the season with so much going on. Orlando City's going to be at home. I'm going to miss the U.S. Open Cup game because I'll be actually on the plane during that game on the flight out there. So the Pride will take on Houston, and hopefully, again, we'll have the Brazilian contingent back in time to play in that game, because the Pride's been really coming on of late, and a chance to gain some points with back-to-back games against the Houston Dash at Houston on the 17th this weekend, and home against Houston on the 24th. OCB will be actually, as this thing drops at 11:30 a.m. on Wednesday the 14th, it's a half an hour before OCB takes on Toronto FC 2, and that's not a mistake by me. That is actually a noon start time for OCB at Toronto FC 2. There's a thing called school day games going on in Canada, and so the next two games, both the 14th at Toronto and on Tuesday the 20th at Ottawa, those are daytime starts because they're trying to get a bunch of school kids out to games and teach them about physical fitness and staying in shape, and also teaching them about the game of soccer. So kind of a good thing that OCB is a part of, but it's a little bit difficult to cover midday games while everybody's at work, and it's a little difficult to see. So, you know, if you have one of those understanding bosses, you can stream those games and watch them while you're at work.
You know, I love the idea of the school day game. It's obviously it's good for the kids. They've been doing it for years up there in Canada with hockey, mm-hmm. And now of course they're doing it with soccer as well. And it's the kids get out, they get to see the physical fitness, they get to get out of school, so they're happy. But at the same time, they get to go enjoy, you know, something really cool, something that we would, you know, I don't know about you, but I know when I was younger, occasionally my dad took me out of school, you know, to go see a baseball game or something like that. So I think it actually furthers an education rather than hinders it. And I applaud, you know, the Canadian school system for implementing it and doing it. It'll be, like you said, noon game. Okay, kind of cool. I will actually be able to watch that game, assuming I can find it online and that my stream doesn't get interrupted for some reason. But it's a really good thing that's even a thing that they're doing. So. I think one of the interesting things, and we touched on it when we were talking about the Open Cup, is what does that mean for the lineup for OCB? Because who's going up? Who's, mm-hmm. you know, coming down? Who's playing in the U.S. Open Cup? Who's going to be playing for OCB? We have no idea. I mean, who knows who's going to be out there? I mean, okay, OCB, we never know exactly who's going to be out there, but I think it's even wilder this week.
Yeah, well, we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. I think before we get into the U.S. Open Cup conversation, before we get into the Orlando City at Montreal this weekend conversation, we'll take a little bit of a look at our mailbag this week. And you can always ask your questions. Don't even have to be about soccer. Hit us up on Twitter. You can use the hashtag AskTMLPC. That stands for the Mainland Podcast, if you want to know what that's all about. But yeah, hashtag AskTMLPC. PC, or you can email us, email themainland@gmail.com, and that's main, M-A-N-E, not M-A-I-N, so please make sure you spell that correctly and include the at the beginning, or we won't get it, and then we won't have any idea. So, Dave, we got some mail this week, as we did last week, so it's nice to see mm-hmm. people are kind of climbing on board with this Ask TMLPC thing. John Hart wants to know, with no Chirinos red, I know he's not available for Saturday, but is he an option for Wednesday, the U.S. Open Cup? John, I think thanks for your question, first of all. Yes, I think Antonio Nocerino is a possibility. There are two things working against Antonio Nocerino for inclusion on Wednesday. The one thing that works in his favor is that he's not going to be able to play Saturday because of the red card he picked up against Chicago. But the two things that are against him is, number one, he's been kind of nursing a little bit of a calf injury this year, and not sure if Jason Christ will want to risk him, knowing that he's got a very busy schedule coming up. The other thing, we've touched on it a little bit, five international players you get to use, and Antonio Nocerino is, of course, an Italian and doesn't have a green card, so he would count against the five. So that means he may not utilize the Italian defensive midfielder in this game, but he might. He might actually do that. So
it would make a lot of sense, from a injury and healing standpoint, since he's not going to be able to be available on Saturday, to go ahead and hold him out. But, you know, that might be one of those, he comes in as a sub later on in the game if Jason decides that he does indeed want to win and he thinks that Nocerino can help him out, and he doesn't get a ton of minutes, but maybe he's able to do something, or if the defensive shape needs some help. Who knows? It's kind of what I was just saying. Who knows what's going to happen with the lineups?
We don't know. You never know what's going to happen. Elder Gorilla asked a bunch of questions.
Okay.
So we thank you, Elder Gorilla, for I love that screen name, for all the questions. First of all, should MLS raise the salary caps to attract superstar players, or are the asking prices ridiculous? What do you think, Dave?
I think it doesn't matter if they raise the salary caps or not. It does, obviously. But I don't know that you're going to get the top guys in the world regardless, if you were to raise the salary cap. The guys are coming here. The top guys in the world are coming here a little bit later in their careers. Okay, we know that. Eventually that might change. I think it's going to have to be a bottom-up change, not a top-down. So I don't think you can start by bringing in the top guys and change it that way. I think you're going to have to start at the bottom and create more quality at the base of the pyramid rather than at the top of pyramid. So, could they? Sure. Would it make a difference? I don't think it would.
For me, it's about growing the game. I think the league has done a good job of being cautious and making sure that the league survives because soccer has had trouble professionally grabbing a toehold in this country. But I think it's entering an age of real acceptance in this country, and it's real growth. We're seeing that with the teams that are fighting to get into MLS, the expansion battles that we're seeing, and obviously the incredible expansion of the USL and teams, trying to get into USL if they can't get into MLS, or using USL to get into MLS. So The league's doing everything it should be doing to grow it in the right way. The only way you're really going to get the top players in the world is if you do away with salary caps completely and just let people pay what they want for players, because that's really how you're going to get the top players, by paying the top dollar. But it's beyond that, because if it were just that simple, all the good players would be in China right now. Because
right.
The Chinese league has been, throwing around ridiculous money for, players that are not even in their prime anymore. Like guys like Carlos Tevez, who would probably come and destroy MLS, but he's not, top of his game anymore, like for a top European team. But he got, crazy money to go over there. So it's not just about throwing money. You really got to make this a destination for soccer the way that England and Germany and Italy and Spain are. Those are perceived to be the top leagues, not just because they have tons of money, but because also they have, that is their country's sport. They have an incredible passion for it. And I think if soccer gets, near that level in this country, then I think, you can take the training wheels off of MLS and do away with salary caps and let teams compete for players. The other thing that you have to remember is that you still got this you're kind of handcuffed by the single entity rule. So, like, if you've got a team in Orlando and a team in Los Angeles that both want a player, they're bidding against each other, and it's technically the same organization, bidding against itself.
Right.
So there's a little bit more nuance to it. And there's we could probably do a whole entire podcast on that. Maybe we'll do that in the off season. But we definitely appreciate the question, Elder Gorilla. We're going to stay with your questions here because there's a few of them. Dave, if you can have any of the old players for Orlando City, would you trade anyone currently to get them back? For example, says Aurelian Collin for Seb Hines as the example given. any ex Orlando City players you would like to have back? Would you trade anyone currently on the team to get them back?
Well, see, now that's the key is what I, you know, are there guys that I would like to have back? Sure. I mean, we mentioned, you know, Venter. Okay. No, he wasn't the most productive, but dang it, if he wasn't a spark plug and I'd love to just have his energy back, would I trade anybody for him? I don't know that I would. I think the reason I say that, I think Coach has done a real good job, and we've talked about this many times, of the acquisitions that he's made and building the team up. And I think, right now, and I'm not saying there's not room for improvement, but just that so many of the players you've brought in have improved Orlando City that actually, I take it back. There's. I don't know who I would trade for him, but I would love to have Molino back.
Yeah, I would trade. We're very, I think we're very deep at defensive midfield and fullback, so I would trade Tony Rocha to get Kevin Molino back. Do you think Minnesota would take that trade?
You know, we could float it.
And that's nothing against Tony. He's been on our show. We like Tony. But to have Kevin back would be awesome because he's the original.
He is the original.
And also, he fills an incredible need with this team, which is a creative attacking midfielder when Kaká's out. So, it would be good to have him back. Elder Gorilla says, seeing as Open Cup is on the way, should Orlando City focus on that or just MLS Cup only and then worry about the path to CONCACAF Champions League after securing that cup?
Ooh, you have to do both. And I think that Coach Christ is going to do exactly that. He's going to maximize his potential to win all the games, and that may mean playing players that normally wouldn't be out on an MLS game, bringing up players from OCB. But I think he's going to position Orlando City to have the best possible chance of winning both Open Cup while not sacrificing the MLS season. It's a tightrope to walk, but it's certainly what I would do, and it's certainly what I expect him to do. You know, do you sacrifice one for the other? If you were going to, you sacrifice Open Cup for MLS, because obviously that's, the main thing that we're playing in. But I don't see that happening.
Well, here's the thing. I'm glad that Elder Gorilla brought this question to us because this has been a thing on our message board, our comment sections and stuff. People, I've seen them saying that Orlando City should just tank the Open Cup and rest up and just concentrate on MLS and getting to the playoffs and that kind of thing. And I don't ever want my team to ever throw a game or not take a champion, take a challenge seriously or throw away a chance to win a trophy. The team that I started following here in Orlando was an ambitious team that wanted to win every competition it was in, wanted to win every trophy and be the best it could be. That's the team I fell in love with, and that's the ambition I want to see from this team. I don't ever want to see a team say, we're not going to try because we got this other thing going on. I think this team is finally a team with sufficient depth that it can rotate the squad, keep everybody relatively fresh, and compete for the title, and it's a path to Champions League. You need, four or five wins? You need four or five wins to get to the Champions League. Why not go for it? Because it's so hard to get to Champions League otherwise, because you got to win Supporters Shield or MLS Cup. You got to win your conference. Mm-hmm. That's not easy to do. This is an easier path to go after, and that's why you see teams in MLS that are not having good seasons throw so much emphasis on it because they know that's the only way they can get to Champions League. So I say yes. And, you know, there are people that don't care about CONCACAF Champions League, which I get that. But, I mean, you ask them about their European team, and they probably want them to make Champions League. So I don't see why it's any different just because we're on a different continent.
It's absolutely no different. I can't tell you how excited I was when Liverpool made Champions League. I mean, it was huge for me. I mean, did they win the EPL? No, they didn't. But you know what? At the end, as it's come down, I'm like, come on, let's win this. Let's get to Champions League. It was important. And it's the same here, like you say. I mean, CONCACAF Champions League. Why wouldn't you want to be in that?
It's great because here's the thing. And Phil Rollins has talked about this before, and I actually have talked to him about this before. It's, you know, if you win, you get into Champions League, get into CONCACAF Champions League. If you win that, you go to the FIFA Club World Cup. And then you're playing against, like, Barcelona. And who wouldn't want to see their team play a competitive game against Barcelona? So, you know, I think it's an awesome thing. I mean, I think people sell the U.S. Open Cup short. It doesn't have the name recognition. It doesn't seem to have the prestige of an FA Cup, but it is the oldest competition, soccer competition in this country.
And yes, it is.
I know that Jason Kreis has taken it seriously in the past. He's reached a final where his team lost 1-0 to DC United a few years back, but he's made that run. He takes this seriously, but he's also going to approach it in a smart way. And I think that there's no reason the team can't field a very competitive cup team and still maintain its integrity for the MLS grind as well. So thank you for the question, Elder Gorilla. I really appreciate that one because that's been a very big topic of debate. And I'm really tired of people saying we should just tank it because nothing sticks in my craw more than just throwing a competition for no reason. We're in this thing. If you're going to do that, just don't enter. You know, just say, you know, sorry, we don't want to be in the U.S. Open Cup.
Yeah, right.
You know, don't waste everybody's time. Another question from Elder Gorilla. Bradley got lucky to score on a chip versus Mexico. Luck tends to run out for the U.S. How far is the U.S. going in World Cup? I say first round. First of all, let me say that Bradley did not get lucky. That was a great piece of skill.
Right.
It was bold. And it was also very calculated. He looked up, saw where Ochoa was, thought he could make it, made the shot, and hit it perfectly, and it went in. That's skill. That's not luck. You could say there's luck involved, but there's luck involved in any goal if you're going to say that, you know, because you could slip in the grass, and then you don't hit your shot well, even if the net is wide open in front of you. So, you know, David Villa did it on a penalty kick against us last year. So, you know,
you can hit the woodwork. I mean, there's so many things that can happen.
Yeah. How far can the U.S. go in the World Cup? Well, first of all, they got to get qualified, which I think they will do. Then they got to get out of their group. Mark it down now. We're going to be in the group of death. We're always in the group of death. So I would say surviving the group of death and getting to the quarterfinals is probably a good goal for the United States. I think they can do that. Anything beyond that is just a very special year.
Absolutely. Yes, we will be in the group of death. We are always in the group of death. I'm sick of being in the group of death, but we are always in the group of death. Inevitably, we're in the group of death. And if we are in the group of death again, I'm going to start, you know me and conspiracy theories. I don't like to believe in them, but anyway, But I'll agree with you. I think that Bruce has got these guys believing and playing for each other, and I think we will be able to get out of the group of death. You get to the next round. After that, I'm right on board with you. After that, I just don't know. It's all going to depend. You know, you're talking about tournaments, so it all depends on who else comes out of elsewhere and who you end up playing.
Last question from Elder Gorilla is somebody posted on Facebook that with Atlanta in the Open Cup, we could play them three times. It smells of a rivalry in the making, you think? And I don't even think it matters if Orlando City plays Atlanta in the Open Cup or not. I think just the proximity of the two cities, I think that there's already quite a bit of animosity between the two fan bases. I think that it's just going to absolutely become a Southeast U.S. rivalry between these two teams, and that will grow into possibly a cup of some type, you got the Cascadia Cup up in the Pacific Northwest between those three teams. I think if Miami or Tampa gets in, I think you might see some kind of a similar competition between the teams down here in the southeast part of the U.S. So, yeah, I think that's going to be a thing regardless of whether they play an Open Cup, but that could even, you know, make it even more of a rivalry perhaps.
It's already a thing. When the team was announced, one of the people, one of my fellow Tallahassee Outlaws, who is a really good friend of mine, we immediately started arguing about who was better, Orlando or Atlanta, and they didn't even have a team yet. So, yes, of course it's a rivalry. Of course it's going to be. Just, you know, like you said, geographically, absolutely. We definitely need to have some sort of cup or award or derby or something that goes around that. And I don't know what it looks like. I'm sure somebody smarter than me will figure it out. But, yes, it's one of those ones where, yeah, I've got it marked on the calendar. I mean, granted, I've got all the games marked on my calendar, but got that one asterisked so that I know when we play Atlanta.
It's going to be fun. There's no question. They're going to be a difficult team to beat because they put a lot of pressure on you. And, you know, it's a good thing that Jason Kreis has revamped the defense, because they're a team that comes at you and comes at you and comes at you. And they are very dynamic in the attack. On the other hand, you can get at their defense. So if you can possess the ball, keep it away from them a little bit, you can get at them and score goals on them. So that's as New York City found out, though, they can hit you quickly and repeatedly. So you've really got to not fall asleep, because by the time you wake back up, you might be down two or three goals. So it'll be fun when we get the Atlanta thing going. I'm surprised that MLS made us wait so deep into the season for those teams to meet. But I think maybe in future seasons, rather than opening with New York City, I think maybe it'll be Atlanta that the team opens up against. So thank you for your questions, Elder Gorilla, with the great screen name on Twitter. Dave, did anybody send you any questions this week?
They did. Mark Johnson asks, what are our chances of doing well in the Open Cup while missing some of our stars?
Well, I think you're going to be missing your stars anyway in Open Cup, at least in the first couple of rounds. I think that I think teams sort of like to put their bench players out there with a mixture of some younger guys from the reserve side, and they try to get a couple quick results. And then as they get deeper into the tournament, they start to use their better players. I don't know if we'll see Kaká even in the 18. I don't know that we'll see Spectre in the 18. Kyle Larin certainly won't be, because he's playing right now, I believe, as we record this, for the Canadian men's national team. Same with Will Johnson. They won't be back. They'll be, you know, even if they come back tomorrow, which is the day this drops, it'll be game day, so they won't be in the lineup. I don't see that happening. I think this team can do well in the Cup because they have a good defense, and it really is just going to come down to taking chances. You know, if they get opportunities to score, whether it's a Haji Berry or a Carlos Rivas, will they have the composure to put the ball in the net in a knockout competition? Hopefully that will be the case. So it really is going to come down to that. I think maybe if Jason Kreis plays a Giles Barnes up top, maybe somebody that can add some stability and composure in the attacking third, I think that might be good. And I know I'm on record saying his MPG will never score for Orlando City, but if he does, it'll probably be an Open Cup.
Well, there you have it. There's your answer, Mark, is that if it happens, MPG is going to score in an Open Cup game. I agree. I think what you're going to see, and what you always see in these types of games, is a mixture of you know, the young, the bench, and you know, somebody in there to provide some stability. So it's that's what we're going to see. What are our chances? I think our chances are excellent. Jason Kreis is a great coach. He's going to put the right people in. He's going to make the substitutions that he needs to try and win those games. As you mentioned earlier, it's something that he believes in. And so, you know, we have just as good of a chance as anybody else out there.
Yeah, and I think this team, if they get by Miami FC, I think that's as good a non-MLS team as they're going to see in this tournament.
Right.
So after that, you know, it's teams that we're a little more familiar with, and those teams are going to be fighting for points, and we may not get their best lineups either. So I think against Miami, you're going to get probably their best shot. I don't think you're going to see that same thing against other MLS teams until you get deeper into the cup. So, and by then, you know, Jason Christ will be playing, you know, a first choice lineup in those games as well. So
right.
It'll all balance out.
Dean asks, with Alex Morgan coming back in July, what will the Pride's formation look like since we have Marta?
That's a good question. I think that the formation will look very similar to what it looks like now, but instead of who we've been putting Chioma, Bogagu, or Jamia Fields in the middle of that three up top, then it's going to be Alex Morgan in that three up top with probably Camilla on one side, and you know, on the other side you're going to have Marta. So I think that has shown to be a very good, you know, support group for the striker, you know, with the two Brazilians on either side. Mm-hmm. So if you put a world-class striker like Alex Morgan between them, good things should happen. And then if you fall behind and you need to add additional attacking players, you can always move Camilla into the midfield and put an Ubogagu, a Jasmine Spencer, a Fields, you know, pacier players, you know, that get forward a lot. I think you can put them in there in that spot. Now, I think the tough thing is you're probably going to see Jasmine Spencer on the bench a little more, but I think that's not a bad thing because I think she's a good bench player. I think she comes off and adds a lot of energy.
Absolutely, and it's and we've kind of, you know, said it, joked about it a little bit of, you know, what it's going to be like when we actually have you know, both Alex and Marta out there. But you know, we weren't really joking. That along with the other, you know, players, you know, Chioma and everybody who's come along and become a team in Alex's, you know, stint over in Lyon, it's just going to add to it. I'm looking forward to it. Like you said, there's so many pieces that we can interchange up there depending on what's going on. It's going to be fun to watch.
All right. Is that all the questions?
No, there was one more which we can probably answer really quick.
Okay.
Chris asked, is pro always going to pro?
Pro gonna pro.
Pro gonna pro.
All right. So there you go. Thanks so much for your questions, everyone. You can hit us up on Twitter with the hashtag AskTMLPC, or you can email your questions to us at themainland@gmail.com, and you can use that hashtag as your subject line so that we know that it's a question. So thanks so much to everybody. There were a lot of them, and hopefully we'll continue to get some good questions like that. Dave, before we get out of here, we would certainly be remiss if we didn't talk about the two upcoming games for Orlando City Soccer Club. First up, U.S. Open Cup. We talked earlier to Brad Russin, former Lion, and now he is a center back on the Miami FC, and he has sort of been bothered by injuries and kind of lost his starting spot after an injury last season that kept him out for a while. But this is a good team. They lead the NASL in goals scored. They have allowed the fewest. They have a 5-0-1 road record, so they have not tasted defeat on the road in this spring season. They're 2-0 in the U.S. Open Cup. They did struggle a little bit with the South Florida Surf, but I'm not sure how seriously they took that match. They did beat a very good Tampa Bay Rowdies team 2-0 in the last round. It's going to be interesting. We've touched on it a little bit throughout the night, throughout this broadcast. It's night when we record it. It might not be night when you're listening to it. But it all comes down to what is Jason Christ going to do? And we don't know. We have heard him say that he's going to lean a little bit more on the MLS players. He's taken this seriously and given this competition some respect. And I still think, you know, obviously there's going to be some guys out. You're going to need to make up for those numbers. Now, with the team not being terribly deep at striker, that bodes well for Haji Berry getting a look. But also the team could just change shape and have one striker up top. There's a lot of things that could happen. Now, I think if you're looking for something most likely to happen, I'm thinking that you're going to probably see, if not for this game, but assuming they get by for the next game, sometime in the next two Open Cup games, you're going to see Haji Berry, you're going to see Richie Larea, you're going to see Pierre da Silva, at least in the 18, if not starting. I think it's safe to say that. I think you're going to see Luis Gil in the lineup. I think you're going to see Servando Carrasco. He's not been getting a lot of minutes. You're going to see him in the lineup. Obviously, the you can't go wrong either way at left back. I think Toya gives you a guy who's not an international. I'm not sure if Ramos has his green card or not. So either way, you could have Ramos probably on the right side, because you're not going to have Scott Sutter out there. He's one of the players that's going to be a veteran that gets a breather. Mm-hmm. So I think you could even see Kevin Alston at right back, but I think you're probably going to see Ramos, especially since he got his night cut short against Chicago with the bogus red card. But on that left side, you could either go Toya or PC, and I think either way, you're in pretty good shape for a U.S. Open Cup game. In the center, we talked about potentially a Redding Hines duo. You could have Redding paired with Leo Pereira, and spend one of your international slots at center back. There's a lot of ways you can go, but I do expect Giles Barnes to be in the lineup at least in the 18. I do believe that MPG will either start or be in the 18. So you're going to see a couple veterans and probably not as many OCB guys as you thought. Some people have speculated maybe Josh Saunders stays with OCB for the time being and Earl Edwards gets a look. But I think Josh Saunders will be in the lineup.
You know, what's funny is when you started that, I think it was like 4 minutes ago when you started all the possibilities that could happen, like we were saying, we have no idea who's coming up, who's going to stay, who's going to do it. I mean, okay, we have some ideas, we know the good possibilities of people who are going to be out and, mm-hmm. People who are thinking are going to be in, Redding, obviously. But the point being is that until that lineup drops tomorrow, there's a ton of questions. And like I said earlier, I'm highly anticipating just seeing what the heck's going to happen, because it's going to, it's almost going to be news just because we have no idea. The thing for me about tomorrow, is, and especially after talking to Brad, I mean, Miami FC, don't look past them. They are on a hot streak. Winner of two, unbeaten in 10 NASL games. They took out the Rowdies 2-0. They're a good team. Do I think we're going to win the game? Yeah, I think we're going to win the game. But it's not like we're going up against some slouch team. I mean, these guys are the best of the NASL. So it's a challenge, and like you said just a couple minutes ago, if we can get past Miami, then that bodes well, going forward into the next round. I'd love to see Seb play.
All right, brass tacks. It's very difficult for a game like this, but your key matchup and your score prediction.
Oh yeah. Well, my score prediction is easier than my key matchups. My score prediction, I'm going to say 2-1. We're in the Purple Palace. It's the first time, Miami's going to come there. I think that the supporters are going to show up and they're going to make the difference. As key matchups, God, that's so hard because we don't know who's going to be out there. I think it's going to come down to scoring. So who's up top? Do we have Barnes up there? Where is MPG? Is Haji? Since I don't know who's going to be on the field, it's incredibly hard. But I'll just put it this way: it's going to be our strikers and the top of the top of the midfield.
All right. Well, I've got a definite key matchup, and that is whether it's Servando Carrasco or whoever, Nocerino, whoever plays defensive midfield has to limit what Kwadwo Poku does in the middle of the field, because he's a name you might remember from New York City FC, a big, strong, pacey guy who is, creative in the attack. He can hold on to the ball through contact. He can pass the ball very well, and he is a focal point of Miami's offense. I think you got to control Poku, so I think that's my key matchup. Poku against the defensive midfield of Orlando City, whether it's one or two players. And again, they might take a more defensive shape in this game than what we've seen in other games, just because the strength of the reserves, the strength of the bench, is in the defensive midfield. So you might see something like that. So, but again, it's all speculation. I also think it feels like about a 2-1 game. I think Miami's got a good offense, so I think they might sneak a goal. out of this, you know, matchup, and it's going to be hard to keep them off the board completely. But I think, you know, Orlando City might be able to score two and overcome that. And I think one of them, should Giles Barnes be in the lineup, I think Giles Barnes gets a clean goal in this game.
Okay.
So there you go. We'll see what happens. It'll all shake out while I'm on a flight to Vegas. And then I'll have to find out what happened when I land, unless I can, you know, unless there's good Wi-Fi on the plane and I can get a score. So Saturday, Montreal Impact comes to town. It's the third of a three-game homestand, four if you count the U.S. Open Cup match. Dave, you have any thoughts on your key matchups and score prediction for that one?
All right. Ali, very similar to my Open Cup. Montreal, they're sitting down eighth or ninth. I can't remember exactly. They're not a bad team. I'm not saying that, but I do think that's why I think that you know, offensive production on Orlando City's part, if we can get that moving, that's going to make the difference. I think that our defense is going to be able to hold up. So what I want to see is goal scoring. So that's where I'm at, and I think we're going to get it. And I'm going to say, last home game before we hit the road again, Lions are motivated. I'm going to go out on a limb and say 2-0 in that game.
Okay. Montreal, for me, has been playing better of late. They're a team that's got talent. They've played, again, like I said, they're starting to round into a little bit better form, which scares me. Anytime a team's got Piatti on and Odoro, that scares me a little bit. I think having Oyongo out is going to hurt them a bit, but it remains to be seen how much it'll hurt them. I think that feels to me like another 2-1 game, okay, maybe for Orlando City. I think that either Piatti or Oduro, who Oduro's really tortured us in the past, will find a way to score a goal. But I think this is one of those games where maybe Orlando City gets the last goal, maybe even in stoppage time, like a late heroic thing. I think that we need to pay Montreal back for the final game last year when Orlando City was chasing them in the playoff run, and they came in and had absolutely no desire to get forward whatsoever, and parked the bus completely and just absorbed a ton of pressure throughout that game. And they hit us on the counter one time and won 1-0 because Luke Bowden was a little slow to step and kept the guy onside. So it was unfortunate, but you know, we needed that game. I think they need to get a little bit payback for that.
Absolutely. They deserve it. So do we.
All right. So there you have it. It's a major, major podcast. It's a supersized podcast. We had a lot to talk about, a lot to get to. And I did want to give a programming note. I don't believe we're going to have a podcast before the Seattle game, but I don't want to tack another key matchup and prediction onto this one, just because it's already running really long. So I think I just want to just say that we'll probably get a little bit later in the week next week, probably after the Seattle game happens in the midweek. So next week's podcast is going to be a little later in the week, and we'll have a little bit more to talk about. But that's okay, because we'll have tons to do. Because I just don't think that while I'm on the road, I'm going to be able to swing recording the podcast. I think my laptop that I'm taking with me is fairly new, and I don't have everything on it that I need. And I'm not going to be spending, you know, staying up all night tonight to do that since I'm leaving tomorrow. So I think we will just not try to rush it and just try to do a better job with it when I get back. So Dave, we will see what we see with the U.S. Open Cup. We'll see what we see on the weekend with Orlando City and Montreal, and of course the Pride visiting Houston. And Orlando City B will have two games before we talk again, both in Canada. And then, of course, after we talk again, they're going to be at Rochester. So a pretty tough stretch for Anthony Pulis's boys, but a lot going on in this month of June.
There is. And, you know, as much as you and I look at these podcasts and we look at the list of things that we've got to cover, and we're kind of like, oh, my goodness, it just means that there's a lot of soccer. And that's always a good thing.
Always a good thing. I just don't like going away during the during the season, because when I don't get to watch the games, it's been kind of a nightmare. I think the last time I didn't get to see a game was the 4-1 loss to Columbus last year on our home field. So
listen, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. So you just keep that stuff there and let us worry about that. You just keep that bad mojo in Vegas. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Keep the bad mojo there. We'll take care of the rest.
My mother-in-law stays in Vegas, so she happened in Vegas, and she stays in Vegas, and that's why I have to go out there to see her. So, it's a family thing. I don't get to do a whole lot of fun stuff, but hopefully I'll get to hit a brewery while I'm out there or something. So, because I like to go get some craft beers, and I will try to do that. But anyway, that's going to do it for a super-sized edition of the Mainland Podcast. That'll do it for episode number 90. It's kind of a milestone. It's about 10 shy of a real milestone. We want to thank Brad Russin of Miami FC, Forever a Lion, #ForeverALion, for stopping by and visiting with us tonight. And on behalf of David Rowe, please visit us on Twitter. We're at The Mainland. Like us on Facebook. Read what we do at themainland.com. And please give us your honest listener ratings on iTunes and leave us a review. That'd be really appreciated. And so we will see you next week. We'll be back to break it all down a little bit later in the week, next week than usual. But on behalf of David Rowe, I am Michael Citro, signing off the way I always do by saying, Go City!